Hi, humans of Instagram. I'm back again, once again, to talk about copywriting and how to make yours better. I'm wearing my favorite shirt, Together Forever, that I got in Vietnam. It's my favorite shirt. Okay, so today, welcome everyone who's coming in. We're gonna talk about the case of the I don't knows, okay? I don't know, I said this in an earlier post and I'm gonna elaborate on this today. I never believe my clients when they tell me, I don't know, because they always do. Sometimes they genuinely don't, but those times are a minority. There are times when you just really wanna honor the not knowing, where honoring the not knowing and letting that take up space is like sacred work. And most of the time when people say, I don't know, it's okay, I'm just gonna be rude today because let's face it, when am I not rude? I'm just gonna say, I don't know is a cop out. And if you have the courage to dig a little bit deeper, you can always find the truth that's underneath the cop out of I don't know, okay? So here are some things that people tell me all the time that they don't know when I don't believe them. People always tell me, I don't know what to offer. I don't know what to offer. And that is a lie. And I say this in the most loving, respectful, caring way. I'm not saying this in a way I'm trying to gaslight you. Like when you feel like, oh my God, I don't know, that sort of, that feeling of like stuckness, that nervous system activation where you feel like you can't see what the next, you know, that is real. And so I don't mean to dismiss that. Of course that's real. But also that like freeze response is happening because there's something beyond it that you may not have been sort of emotionally ready to see yet. And that's not a problem, right? Okay, someone says, I use I don't know when I feel scared about something. Yes, honestly, so do I. Like, it's human. So I'm not judging or criticizing your moment of I don't know, but I'm saying, okay, human to human, vulnerable, flawed, scared human to another human. I'm saying, okay, let's just... Hold on. Hopefully, 빨리 전화해주세요. Oh my God. Real-time Korean family emergency. Okay, hopefully that's gonna get taken care of. What was I saying? I'm gonna like read the comments to remind me of what I was saying. I don't know. There's something beyond that I don't know. Okay, I don't know what to offer. Okay, so it's scary. It's scary to be human. Let's gather up a little bit of courage. When you say, I don't know what to offer, imagine me as your coach responding back to you. What if you did know? What if you had some idea? When I ask that question, people always have something. People always have something. People tell themselves, I don't know, when what they really mean is, I know, but I'm scared of the truth. I am scared that it's dumb. I am scared that it's not gonna work. I'm scared that no one else is going to value it. I am scared that I don't know how to talk about it. Which again, all valid things, right? Especially the closer something is to our hearts, the more we can, more it can incite fear in us. So that's totally normal. But so the next step that I propose to you is instead of being stuck in the I don't know, ask yourself, I do know, and it's scary to know what I know. It's tender for me to own what I know because it means a lot to me. When you say that, it is, you're now so much more honest with yourself. And you are that much closer to being able to alchemize the fear. Yeah, so here's a really great comment, which is, someone said, I'm afraid what I want to truly offer is too vague and that it makes me doubt myself and it puts me in the I don't know space. So this is such a common experience for any creative human. The creative process, and I don't use that expression just for like art. I mean that for business, like all of my people, like you're my people, your business is your creative expression. It's your art, right? And so actually, I want to offer this. If you thought that what you want to offer is like very clear and succinct and neatly figured out and not too vague, not too big, not too scary, that's probably not the deep, true work that is trying to come out of you. Anytime someone's like, I know exactly what it is. It's ABC, da 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 da. Here's the outline. I know exactly how to... It's not that I don't respect that. It's just that I know that the real thing is so much bigger and gnarlier, because guess what? All great things are. Like, imagine trying to describe someone you love, someone that means a lot to you, to someone else. Can you describe someone that you love in like 3 bullet points? Can you capture the essence of someone you love in an elevator pitch? Can you come up with a really succinct, clear, summary of someone you love that in a way that captures the fullness of what makes them so lovable? It's impossible. You could try, and you might even have beautiful words about it, but the beautiful words will always only be a snapshot of a whole multidimensional thing, right? So if it feels too big, if it feels too vague, good. That means we're on to something that's real. That means we are fully seeing and appreciating the complexity that's inherent in anything that has heart and soul. You know what's neatly figure outable and succinctly summarizable? Machines. IKEA furniture. It says, here are the parts, A, B, C, D, E. Here's how you put them together. And then here's what it does. Boom. You've got an IKEA table. Okay. If your offer is bigger than an IKEA table, then of course it's going to feel impossible to write an instruction manual. Of course it's going to be impossible to capture it in just a few clever lines that encapsulate everything. Okay. So... somebody just asked, how do you embrace the vagueness? You embrace the vagueness. How do I want to answer this? But like, let me ask you this. Would you even ask that question of how to embrace the vagueness if you weren't shaming the vagueness? I think what's inherent, tell me if I'm wrong. I think what's inherent in that question of how do we embrace the vagueness is a shaming of vagueness as somehow wrong and less than and somehow broken and not all there yet. Like, we are thinking of it as less than. Vagueness is, in many ways, I'm just gonna spit this out. I might change my mind about this later, but right now I'm thinking like, vagueness, I think, is just another word for bigness. I think vagueness is just another word for complexity. I think vagueness is just another word for something poetic. Ooh, you know what's vague? Poems. Vague, in quotes, right? You know what's quote-unquote vague? Like, actually great art. If you look at not great art, it's very easy to summarize. Oh yeah, that story is about blah, blah, blah. Commercial art, right? Great art has layers and layers and layers upon layers of meaning, and there's so much room for interpretation, right? That's what makes something great. It makes people, you know, like, there are plays that I've seen years ago where I'm still like, what did that mean? What was the playwright trying to convey when they wrote that line? And I can't get the haunting image of like a particular moment in conversation in that play where I'm like still mulling over, I'm still unfolding it in my heart. Why? That is what art does, right? So if you have something that's quote unquote too vague, it might be because you have something alive, something that is art and not an IKEA table. Okay. So develop a practice of being at home with incomplete, partial, frustratingly inadequate descriptions of things, because that is the best we can do with things that are so much inherently more than that. Like if I were to think, describe my love for my son, you know, I could have the most beautiful words about it, and it would also always fall short of the full truth of it. Okay? Okay, so there's that. So being at home in what we call vagueness in a shaming way in this culture that's obsessed with clarity, that fetishizes order and figure out ability and succinctness, right? All symptoms of the sick modern Western civilization and culture that we fetishize clarity and succinctness, I think at the cost of our own souls. Okay, so that's my answer to I don't know what to offer. Yes, you do. And yes, it's too big for a clever 3-point summary. And that means you have something real and meaningful, something that's alive. So get used to kind of tumbling with that. Get used to saying things anyway. Get used to knowing that what your assignment is poetry, not writing an IKEA instruction manual. Okay, not too bad on IKEA. God knows I love IKEA, but you know what I mean? Your art is not IKEA, an IKEA table. Okay, so the next very popular I don't know is I don't know who to talk to. I don't know who I'm speaking to, okay? And so this I don't know is also something that is manufactured by this toxic business culture that is a product of white supremacy. Oh yeah, I'm going all the places. I don't know who to talk to. The only reason you think that is because toxic conventional business culture has taught you that there is a specific person that you should be talking to, and they should be figured out by you filling out an ideal customer avatar worksheet, and you're supposed to know like where they live and what car they drive and what they order at Starbucks and how much is in their bank account and their favorite sexual position and et cetera, et cetera. Like has been sprayed all over the air that we breathe, that's who you're supposed to have that figured out. And if we don't have that fucking weird ass worksheet in our brains, then you don't know who you're talking to. And I call bullshit. I call toxic lies. I call a culture of business and of communication and of doing commerce that was never built with our best interest in mind. It was not built for humans like you and I. Okay. So I'm going to give you the answer to who you want to talk to right fucking now. And that it's this: whoever you talk to, who you want to talk to is whoever delights in your humanity. Whoever sees you, gets you, celebrates you, is cheering for you in all of your creative expressions. That is who you want to talk to every single time. Imagine, I wonder if you can think of someone like that in your life, someone who delights in who you are as a human being. Not in what you produce, not in your resume, not in your follower count, not in your socialized identities, but someone who delights in who you are as a human being with all of the inherent contradictions and complexities. Someone who knows that your resume tells an incredibly partial story of who you are, that is partial at best and not true at worst. Someone who looks at you with grace when you are stumbling. Someone who has just unhurried, just you know, generous, infinite trust in you when you are taking time to figure things out. Someone who believes that what you have inside you is worthy of taking up space in the world with, whatever that thing is, unconditionally. Someone who every time you open your mouth, they want to hear what you have to say. They're curious about how your mind works, even when it works in unconventional ways. Someone who has room in their heart for all of your ups and downs, because guess what? They do too, and we're all human. And you showing up in your imperfection, quote unquote, is just makes them love you even more because they feel more connected to you in your humanity. Someone who is infinitely interested in you, and therefore someone who, when you say, I have something to offer the world, you know, for money or not, they're always like, oh my gosh, tell me more. If you came up with it, I want to know. If you think it's worth money, I want to know. And whatever you've got to offer, wherever you are in life, they're just like so interested, so warmly curious, so lovingly, has such loving, open, curious, encouraging, supportive space for you. That is who you're writing to every time. If you can think of someone like that in your life, fantastic. Have them, have their face in your mind as you're writing. Imagine they're in the room with you. If anyone else is in the room with you, kick them the fuck out. That is who I have always spoken to in my copywriting, in my marketing, because guess what? If it were the requirement, if I had to present a perfect, figured out, succinct, version of myself and my offers every time, most of the time I would not have much to write about because I am not perfect. I am not figured out. I am not bullet pointable. I am not elevator pitchable. And being human, more often than not, I am just kind of like, I don't understand life. Like, that's where I am most of the time. And in those moments, I feel emboldened to reach out. I feel emboldened to express myself. I feel emboldened to try to connect with my thoughts in those imperfect, wobbly moments. Because I in my heart, who I'm talking to is someone who sees me in those moments and is like, I'm so glad she's here. I'm so glad she's sharing. Her humanity moves me because it reminds me of my own. I feel safer in the world because she's here. I feel less alone in the world because she's here. I am so interested in what she has to say, even when it's not perfect, in quotes. That is how I'm able to share things, like, you know, share stories about places where I messed up. That is how I'm able to share stories that I, you know, I learned from, stories that deepened me. That's how I'm able to show up and keep sharing and keep connecting and keep building community, even when I genuinely don't know what I want to offer next. Or even if I'm offering something now, if I'm not sure what it is anymore, because again, I'm like, because things, even my own creations, feel too big for me sometimes. None of those things have to hold me back from sharing and reaching out and connecting and writing. If I know that who I'm talking to is someone who is just infinitely appreciative of who I am as a human being. And guess what? You have those people too. You have those people too. And you will find more of them when you trust that they're out there and you speak to them more and more, okay? So that's who you talk to. I just gave you the answer. So if anyone says, I don't know who to talk to, I don't know who I'm writing to, again, I will just point you back to this live, this portion. The next I don't know that people trip up on is when people say, I don't know how to talk about what I do. Same thing. Of course you don't. If anyone asked me at any point, point blank, Simone, what do you do? Or like, Simone, what's your offer about? I guarantee you 99% of the time, my response will be, this still happens to me when anytime like ask me what I do, like usually, I don't know, like I'm in an airplane and somebody's sitting next to me says, oh, so what do you do? I'm always like, and I just like say stupid words, right? I'm the fucking queen of copywriting, if I may say so myself. Many other people have said that about me. I'm not modest about it. And still, every time I feel the pressure to talk about what I do, you have to talk about what you do. I clam up, I freeze. And even if I push through that frozenness and make myself say something anyway, okay, so I guess what I do is... Every time I even say something like that, it just comes out so awkward and stilted and lifeless. The worst copy I have written is when I sat down and told myself, okay, now you have to talk about this offer. Like, that always results in very uncompelling, lifeless, boring, forced, awkward copy. So how do you do it? But obviously I do talk about my offers, which is why I have the business I do. So how do you do it? You talk about your offer in ways that are compelling, ironically, when you take that pressure off of yourself. And you have to listen. This is paradoxical. You have to let your mind wander. Instead of saying, I'm going to have to sit down for the next hour, I have to come up with some copy to talk about my offer. Instead of that, go for a walk. Instead of that, take a shower and make your bed. Instead of that, cook yourself some soup. Instead of that, pick up the phone, call your good friend and have a conversation. In you living your life, when you're just living your life, when you put yourself in the flow of life, your spirit will drop these nuggets at you. You might be on the walk and you see a tree, and that tree suddenly reminds you of like this aspect of your work, and you're like, oh, that's such a good metaphor for this, whatever, something like that, right? This is a collaboration. This is a dance with the spirit of your business. This is a dance with the spirit of your creativity. Never force yourself to come up with, you know, how to talk about what I do. Do something that puts you in a state of flow instead. Like my most common go-tos are, I take a walk. I love cooking, so I cook. I talk to people I love. I just hang out. I watch random funny shit on YouTube. And it's like, you kind of have to like let go of the agenda. And then in that space where there's no pressure and you are in movement, the spirit of your business will drop ideas at you. It will drop nodes of connection. It will drop inspiration. It'll drop stories that will naturally feel like a rising up of creativity. You're gonna wanna talk about it. Like, oh, you know what? I was just talking to my cousin on the phone and they told me this thing about from our childhood, and that reminded me, blah, 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 right? Trust. And when you get those downloads, when you get those nuggets, you have to honor it. You have to make a practice of honoring it so that the goddess of creativity, the spirit of your business, whatever you want to call it, trusts that you're going to act on the ideas that it gives you, right? So if you're like, okay, Simone said I have to take the pressure off and go for a walk. So I go for a walk, and while I am just like looking at birds, I just like had this idea, but that's probably stupid. That's too vague. I probably shouldn't talk about that. Like, if you keep doing that, the spirit of your business is going to be like, bitch, I keep giving you ideas and you keep ignoring me. And so that flow is going to move towards drying up. So don't let that happen to you. You got to honor the nuggets. You got to honor the droplets of inspiration, of ideas. No matter how much your brain is judging it as not good enough or whatever, right? The more you do that, the more you will develop a trusting relationship with the spirit of creativity. The more you will develop a trusting relationship with the spirit of your offer, that it will communicate with you when you're not putting the pressure on yourself to have to perform, right? So, you know, I often share this and it shocks people. Like when I do a launch, when I'm really like promoting something, I don't have anything planned in advance. Everything I write is entirely spontaneous. It's in the moment. I have no idea what copy I'm going to write tomorrow until tomorrow comes. I have no idea what copy I'm going to write on the last day of launch until it's the last day of launch. And the reason that I am so spontaneous and in the moment about everything and I still do well is because I have practiced for years building a really trusting, loving friendship with the spirit of my creativity. So I'm not freaked out because I don't know what I'm going to say. I trust that the nugget's going to come when it comes. And it always does, you know? And what flows through me in the moment is more compelling than anything I could have planned out, anything that I could have contrived with my logical mind, because people can tell that it's alive. It's alive without having been squished into a box. That is not to say that you have to write everything spontaneously. You can't plan your writing. You can't. I'm not saying any of that. You know, I know many people who plan or batch or whatever they're writing and it works for them. But I'm just pausing to just consider if I agree with what I just said. I do agree with what I just said. You know why? Because I think people who do the best with planned content is people who are actually so... I have a few people in mind when I am saying this right now. People who plan their content in advance and they batch it out. The people who actually do well with those, meaning it works for their workflow and it also works for their sales, are people who have such a well-cultivated, intimate friendship with their creativity that even if you were to say, hey, you're not allowed to plan anything, everything you write has to be spontaneous, they'll be like, yeah, okay. And everything they have already written that they're planning in advance, it already carries so much skill, so much life that it can be bashed and planned without losing any of that life. Like, that life is already there. And a lot of people default to trying to plan because they don't trust the flow of their creativity. And in those instances, the whole planning batching doesn't work. And when they do try to make it work, all the copy just comes out so flat. And this is like what breaks my heart so much. Like, this is one of the primary reasons I wanted to offer my course on copywriting, Writing with a Sword, which starts May 8th, is because I would just see people working so hard on strategizing and like their copy and like writing things in advance. Okay, I'm going to hit this point and then I'm going to hit this point and then I'm going to hit that point. And it all makes beautiful sense logically. And they work so hard at it. And it's like this inverse proportionality thing where the harder they work at it, the more they plan, the more strategize, the worse and worse and worse the copy gets. The less people want to read it, the less compelling it gets. I see it happening around me all the time. The harder people work, the less good their copy gets. And I'm like, why? I want to save you so much suffering and improve the quality of your writing by like 1,000. If you were to stop planning and strategizing as a way to cope with not being able to trust your creativity. Easier said than done. None of this shit is instant. None of this shit is overnight. It takes practice to trust. It takes you know, takes practice, takes time. But I promise you, what comes out of this real-time dance is going to be so much more compelling, so much more magnetic, charismatic, alive, real, seductive than anything you can come up with while trying to strategize the perfect way to talk about what you do. Okay? Okay, I am going to... You guys are so funny. By the way, this is like my new favorite way of connecting with people on Instagram Lives. So thank you so much for joining in and asking questions. And I try to get to as many as I can. And I always save these lives so you can come back to my grid later and watch them. And if you ask me questions, I'll do my best to answer. Because guess what? All of the fun is in the conversation. All the fun is in the community, not just me yelling into the void, even though I don't mind doing that. Okay, so somebody asks, if we don't get inspiration on certain days, we honor that and be okay with not posting. I am not a big structure person either, and I don't like scheduling things. Gives me the ick. Ooh, okay, so you are like me. We don't like scheduling things. I rebel against schedules. And I thought that made me defective until I realized that for most of human history, humans didn't have fucking schedules and calendars. So maybe we are not evolved to have schedules and calendars. That's not a maybe, that's a definitely. And so, congratulations, you're human. So my answer to that is a little bit complex. If we don't get inspiration, do we just not post? I'm gonna go into depth in this in my course, Writing with a Sword, which begins on May 8th, so sign up now. because there's two different ways you can write on days when you're not inspired. Because believe me, I have those days too, right? You can make yourself write in a way where you are shaming the version of you who doesn't want to write. Thinks that you'd be a better version of yourself if you did have inspiration and if you did have the willpower and the discipline to just sit down and do the thing. It's not so complicated, you know? Just do the thing. Or scaring yourself into writing, which is another favorite of humans, which is, well, if you don't write today, then nobody's gonna, you know, everybody's gonna drop off the face of the earth and stop caring about you, and then your business is gonna fail, and then everyone's gonna be right that you never had what it took to be succeed in the first place, and then you'll feel like a failure for the rest of your life. So better write and post today, even though you don't feel like it, right? That's, you can scare yourself, you can intimidate yourself into writing, you can shame yourself into writing. If those feel like the only options available, I say refusing to write will be your rebellion. Refusing to write will be your liberation. Don't write. Now, there are other times when so I just said on those days, refusing to write will be your rebellion and liberation. That's going to be the act of love for yourself is to not listen to those voices and not write. Sometimes there will be days when love, real love for yourself feels like showing up anyway. Not because you're scared of what would happen if you don't. Not because you're shaming yourself when you're not writing. But because you trust that there is something that is worth, something inside you that's worth expressing, even on days when you, quote unquote, don't feel like it. That even on your least creative, most stuck day, that there is something inside of you. If you were to just get it out, would be a meaningful creative practice for you and possibly an opportunity for human connection for someone else. Even your worst writing could be those things. A self-love practice, a self-witnessing practice, and a practice of trusting that your creativity has value an opportunity to connect to another human being. There are days when believing all those things and writing anyway, even though your brain might be loud with, this is stupid, blah, 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 you don't have an inspiration today, what you're saying is crap, blah, blah, blah. There are times when writing anyway, in spite of those voices, is the more radical act of self-love. And when you persist through those days and honor the inherent life of your creativity regardless of what your brain has to say about its quality or usefulness or whatever, if you keep that up, that's going to build a critical muscle of, once again, the trust between you and your own creativity. Like, I have that, and it took a long time to build. Now, on my worst day, when I am on the floor, like, crying, because I don't see the point of me. On the worst day, if someone said, you have to write, I know that I would write something that, even, like, no matter how crap I feel, I know that what's in here matters, it's important, and I have that trust in myself, you know? And I built that trust by writing on many, many, many days when I didn't feel like it. Not out of fear, not out of shame, but because I wanted to build that muscle of trusting in myself, okay? Another question. Okay, here's a question. What misconception / misunderstanding about writing are you seeing holding people back the most right now? So great question. Thank you for asking it. I think it's not so much a misconception or misunderstanding as much as a misorientation, if that's a word, which it's not. I think it's like a faulty relationship that we have with writing. And what I see holding people back the most is transactionalism. And let me elaborate on that. So many of us, because of the culture we live in, modern Western culture, we have a transactional relationship with not just words that we write, but our bodies. Let me start with the words. We have a transactional relationship with the words we write. They have to convert for us. They have to produce sales for us. They have to produce engagement and follows and all these things that serve a capitalist bottom line. And if our words are not doing that, they're not useful. They're too vague. They're too whatever, this and that. And there's this like relentless finger wagging, shaming, and devaluing unless it is bringing us something that's useful for capitalism. That is a transactional relationship to words. We have a transactional relationship with our creativity, where if it's not our creativity, if it's not yielding an easily consumed product that can be packaged up all pretty and neat and perfect with a little bow on top for other people to consume, then we judge it as worthless and all these things. That's a transactional relationship with our creativity. It's you must produce, hopefully, a capitalist fruit in order for it to be valuable. Okay? We have a transactional relationship with our bodies. How many of you have beaten up your bodies? Hopefully not literally, figuratively, because it just didn't have the energy, that just wasn't feeling the inspiration, just didn't feel safe enough to get up and write. Then you're shaming your body, you're beating up on your body, you're hating your body, you're going like this to your body, I'm wagging my finger, because it won't do what you want it to do in order to produce for capitalism. These are transactional relationships. It also goes, by the way, to the people that are in our audience, people that are following us, right? Oh, I have 500 followers. How can I make them buy from me? How can I get sales from them. And don't get me wrong, wanting to sell to the people that you have is incredibly different. There's a whole world of difference between that and seeing your people as data points to be extracted from for maximum profit. I sell to you, those of you who are listening. I sell without shame, I sell without reservation, because I really believe in what I'm offering. And I know that those of you who are aligned at this moment with what I'm offering, I know it's gonna be a joy for you to buy. And I know that even if you're not, you know, aligned in the moment to want to buy from me, I still know that for the right people, you will enjoy hearing from me. You will learn from following me, even if you're not giving me money, right? So while I am selling to you, I do not look at all of you as data points to be that I can extract from for maximum profit. If I saw it that way, believe me, you would see me showing up in a very different way. And believe me, it would be very stressful for me to show up and talk to you, because every interaction I have, everything I say has to serve that purpose. It has to pay, it has to produce, right? And so it's hard to, and it's difficult, and it's ultimately ineffective for business even to have a transactional relationship with you, with the people that you write to. And yet here we are, many people have that anyway. So the question was, what do I see? What misconception or misunderstanding do I see that people have that holds them back the most when it comes to writing? And it's not really a misconception, but it's a misaligned relationship of transactionalism. Of not valuing your body, your creativity, your writing, your people, your business, your ideas, unless it's going to produce. Not trusting all those things unless it's going to produce a capitalistic end for you. This, when you adopt this and you are a heart-centered person, a creative human being who leads with your heart, when you try to treat relationships transactionally, that is inherently going to feel so bad and icky and wrong and awkward on your body that you will just, your nervous system will just shut down and refuse to produce. And then you'll be like, why aren't you producing? We should be producing so we can make money. And then the more you treat it that way, the less you're going to want to produce, because again, if you're someone who leads with your heart, the transactional relationships just won't sit right with you. And so the biggest part of what I'm going to do in Writing with the Sword, my upcoming copywriting course, is going to be taking the power out of those transactional relationships, undoing the transactional relationships so they become loving relationships. Believe me, when you love on yourself, when you love on your creativity, when you love on your words, when you love on your body, when you love on your people, and you seek and build joyful consent with each of these entities, you seek and build joyful consent with your creativity, with your writing, with your heart, with your body, with your creativity, did I already say that, with your people, to have experiences together. When you talk to your own creativity and you're like, hey, let's have an experience together. When you're talking to your people that you are marketing to and you say, hey, there is no agenda other than let's have an experience together. And that's joyful for both of you. And you have people's consent. You have your body's consent. You have your spirit's consent. When those things, those new patterns of loving, consensual, joyful relating, when those patterns become the norm, your business will be so different. And ironically, it's gonna be so much easier for you to make money. Okay, that is what I had to say. Thank you for the great questions. I hope that helped. And by the way, I'm saving the audios of all these IG lives to my brand new podcast, So if you just want to like binge listen to all my IG lives, you can go to my podcast and listen to all of them on your drive or whatever. And you can find my podcast in whatever, wherever you listen to podcasts from by searching My Notes, because that is the name of my new podcast, My Notes. And you'll see like my name come up. So you can listen to all those there. Once again, Writing with the Sword, my 7-week brand new course on the unconventional take on healing your relationship with copywriting and getting the most powerful writing out of you in a way that feels like love to your body and your spirit. Join Writing with the Sword. It begins May 8th. That's pretty soon. You can find the link in the link in my bio. I'll talk to you later. Bye. Bye.